त्रिजाताय तोत्रवेत्रैकपाणये ज्ञानमुद्राय कृष्णाय गीतामृतदुहे नमः। हरे कृष्णा। वेलकम बैक टू द भगवद गीता भक्ति शास्त्री कोर्स। नाउ वी आर इन 13th चैप्टर ऑफ द भगवद गीता। द 13th चैप्टर इज ऑफन कंसिडर्ड टू बी द फिलोसॉफिकली मोस्ट कॉम्प्लेक्स एंड इंट्रिकेट चैप्टर्स एंड इट कंटेन्स मेनी वर्सेस विच आर quite difficult to comprehend, and we will come to that section, especially the section 13.13 to 19 is quite abstruse. Abstruse means difficult to comprehend. So we have just now started discussing about Kshetra and Kshetrajna. So let's look at 13.4. Tat Kshetram Yatcha Yadrukcha Yadvikari Yatashchayat चयो यत् प्रभावश्च तत्समासेन मे शृणु। तत्क्षेत्रं यच्च यादृक् च। तत्क्षेत्रं रेफर्स टू दैट क्षेत्र। सो बेसिकली दिस इज अ वर्स व्हिच इज लाइक अ समरी वर्स व्हिच टॉक्स अबाउट ऑल दैट इज गोइंग टू कम लेटर इन द चैप्टर। यच्च यादृक् च यद्विकारी यतश्च यत्। सो Prabhupada translated that field, then as it is, Yadruk, Vikari, what are its changes? Yatas is what is its origin? Prabhava, what are its influences? Tat samasena, in summary, me shrunu, please hear. So therefore, what we are looking at now is, our Krishna is saying, you know, in brief I am explaining these to you, so let's look at what all is there. So, 13.4 is a summary verse which will be giving a glimpse of what is going to come later. So how the body is constituted, that is text 6. What changes the body undergoes, that is mentioned in text 7 and text 20. How, when and where the body is produced, that is 6, 21 and 22. The identity of the knower and the field of activities, that is text 14 to 18 and 23. And the influence of the knower, that is Prabhava. So text 14 to 18. So basically there are five topics which are mentioned. Yat kshetram, tat kshetram yatcha yadrukcha, yad vikari yatascha yat, tacha yo yat prabhavascha, tat samasena me shrunu. So tat samasena, in summary, is being described over here. So let's look at Srila Prabhupada's purport briefly. Basically Prabhupada says that this is something like equating the important and the important. What is that? He says equating the jiva with the Supreme Lord. So the Supreme Lord has all potencies. The jiva is not exactly important, but as compared to the potency of the Supreme Lord, the jiva's potency is insignificant. And so you can't equate the jiva with the Supreme Lord. So now let's move to the next verse. Rishibhir Bahudha Gitam छंदो भेर विविधै पृथक ब्रह्मसूत्र पदैश्चैव हेतुमद् भेर विनिश्चितै ऋषिभिर् बहुधा गीतम्। सो ऋषिभिर् बहुधा, द ऋषिस हैव संग इन वेरियस वेज। सो गीतम कैन रेफर टू सॉन्ग्स, इट कैन आल्सो यूज्ड टू डिस्क्रिप्शंस। सो ऋषिभिर् बहुधा, द ऋषिस इन वेरियस वेज हैव डिस्क्राइब्ड छंदो भेर by the Vedic hymns, vividhai prithak, various. So different rishis have described in different hymns in different ways. And this has also been talked about in Brahma Sutra Padaishchaiva. Brahma Sutra refers to the Vedanta Sutra. Now, this word has many names. Generally, Prabhupada would prefer the name Vedanta Sutra to describe this. The traditional commentators, so Madhvacharya, it says commentary on the Brahma Sutra. That's what normally would be the word that is used. They all mean the same thing, Brahma Sutra and Vedanta Sutra. So, as we have discussed in the first class, when we discussed the overview of the six systems of philosophy, that Vedanta is the conclusion among the six systems of philosophy. And this particular book establishes how Vedanta is the conclusion of all the systems of philosophy. So it is called as Vedanta Sutra. At the same time, the book is also talking about Brahman as the ultimate reality. So in that sense, it is also Brahma Sutra. So here Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita is using the word Brahma Sutra to describe this. Brahma Sutra Padaishchaiva. So, Pada refers to sections of the Brahma Sutra. There are Adhyayas and there are Padas in the... there are Adhikaranas, Adhyayas, Padas. Pada is a unit of prose construction. Just like we have chapters, so like that Pada is also a unit. So, Brahma Sutra Padaishchaiva. Hetumadbhir vinishchitai. Hetumadbhir refers to cause and effect or logic. The Brahma Sutra is largely based on logic. It focuses on explaining how it starts with scripture. So the whole purpose of the Vedanta Sutra is to establish how Brahman is the ultimate reality. And the way it does it is by sequential progression. It establishes step by step by step how how the various systems of thought that are there, that were there at that particular time, including not just the orthodox thoughts but also the heterodox thought. Orthodox are those which accept the Vedantic systems of philosophy, which accept Veda as authority, and heterodox are those which reject Veda as authority. So Buddhism, Jainism, Charvakism are heterodox, whereas Yoga, Vedanta, Sankhya Yoga, then Vaisheshika, then Mimamsa and Vedanta. So all these are the orthodox. Orthodox means they accept Vedic authority. So whatever be the schools of thought, how among them the Vedanta is the highest, that's what is established. And scripture is quoted, but the import of scripture is established through both quoting other parallel scripture verses and as well as through establishing the authority by logical inferences. So we see significantly here Krishna is quoting authority. Krishna is saying what I am speaking is not something which I have concocted. Of course, what Krishna speaks is never concocted, because Krishna is the ultimate authority. But Krishna is setting a standard by saying that what he is speaking is what has been spoken earlier by the great sages. Chanda can refer to a particular way in which the Vedic hymns are recited. Chanda can also refer to Chandogya Upanishad. There also the word Chanda comes over there. So, generally the Vedic hymns don't talk so much about the ultimate reality directly. The Vedic hymns focus more on Karma Kanda, and the ultimate reality is talked about more in the Upanishads. So here Chanda can refer to Chandogya Upanishad. Now Prabhupada explains that there is Vedanta Sutra and then is Parahashara Sutra also. Prabhupada says that Vyasadeva's father Parashara is also a great sage, and he has written in his books of religiosity, Aham Tvam Chitthanye, that we are all transcendental. Aham Tvam Chitthanye, that is actually more or less similar to Atveva Aham Jatunasam 2.12, Atvam Neme Janadhipaha. That all of us, I, you and all these kings, we are all indestructible. So Brahma Pucham Pratishtha, this is what we discussed last time, the five levels, Annamaya, Pranamaya. So the connection of all this is that these are various levels at which Brahman is manifested, and this is where levels at which we ultimately realize the absolute truth. So Prabhupada writes, one has to search for this truth in Vedanta Sutra or Brahma Sutra. So then Prabhupada quotes a few sutras from the Vedanta Sutra. We will not go into that because they are quite technical. Now we come to a brief description of Sankhya. So Mahabhutani Ahankaro Buddhiravyaktamevacha Indriyani Dashaikamcha Panchachendriya Gocharaha Ichhadvesha Sukham Dukham Sanghatashchetanadhriti Etat Kshetram Samasena Savikaram Udharitam. So Mahabhutani Ahankaro. So as we know, there are 24 elements in Sankhya which are listed in the 6th verse. So Mahabhutani which are the Mahabhutani, earth, water, fire, and air and ether. They are considered gigantic elements. These are five. Then Ahankar is the sixth element. Ahankar refers to false ego. Then Buddhi is the seventh. Avyakta is the unmanifested, the Pradhan, that is the eighth. Then Indriyani, the Shaikam, cha. So five Karma Indriyas, five Gyan Indriyas, and the mind, so the Shaikam, they are 11. So we had 6 in the first line, 2 in the second line, that is 8, and then we have 11 in the third line, that is 19. And then Pancha cha Indriya Gocharaha, and then the 5 sense objects. There is form, touch, taste, smell, and sound. So like that, there are the 5 sense objects. So these constitute the 24 elements. So Krishna, what is Krishna describing over here? What is going on in this section actually? We understand that there is Kshetra and there is Kshetragya. So now Krishna is right now describing the Kshetra. So first he described Kshetragya briefly as, he is that one who is the knower of the field, that Atma and the Paramatma. And then he said, now I'm going to describe to you where the Kshetra comes from. So he's describing that here, and he's describing various things in connection with that. So Pancha cha Indriya Gocharaha. So like that, now the Kshetra is material nature. What is material nature constituted of? These 24 elements. So he's describing the 24 elements. Now he moves forward and he starts describing further. Ichha dvesha sukham dukham sanghatas chetanadhriti etat kshetram samasena savikaram udaritam. So it's interesting. So Krishna had told in the fourth verse that the kshetram vikarishcha. So vikara is transformations. So what are the transformations? What are the changes that the kshetra undergoes that he is describing in this verse? Vikara is change. So vikaram udaharitam. So what are the vikara that the kshetra undergoes? This is described ichha dvesha, is attachment and aversion, and then naturally concomitant with that is sukham and dukkham. So that which for which we have ichha, accordingly we experience sukha in connection with that, and that for which we have dvesha, we experience dukkha in connection with that. So for when we get something which for which we have ichha, we get sukha, and for that which we have dvesha, for example, say I don't like a particular sabji, and that is the only sabji in the meal, my mouth will turn in distaste. So when I have dvesh for something, that leads to, when I get that, there is dukkha. The simple example. There are of course many bigger things which we may not like and we get in life. So like now, these are considered to be the vikara of kshetra. How is that? The soul, the seat, the source of consciousness is transcendental. That's not a part of kshetra. The soul is kshetragya. But the analogy which will come back again and again in this chapter is the analogy of a person watching a movie. When a person is watching a movie, the person is like the kshetragya, and the movie screen on which the movie is being played, that is like the kshetra. So now at a level of constituents or components, what is the kshetra made up of? Well, there has to be a projecting screen, there has to be a projector, there has to be the proper acoustic arrangements, lighting arrangements, all that thing by which the attention will gravitate towards the TV screen. So all that is the background. But then, so that is the kshetra, that is the area where that visual experience, audio visual experience of the movie will be created, so that it can be experienced by others. But then within the movie, what happens is kshetra vikar. So if the hero and the heroine are embracing, then there is ichha, and that leads to sukha. And then the hero is being pound, beaten up by the villain. There is dvesha, one doesn't want that to happen, or the villain is chasing after the heroine. There is dvesha for that, and that leads to dukkha. So ichha, so there is ichha, and then there is dvesha. So based on whatever is happening, so this is considered kshetra vikar, because actually the changes are happening within the illusory framework of the movie theater of the movie projection on the screen, but they have an effect. So it's interesting. Further, he says that Sanghatas Chetana Dhriti. Chetana refers to consciousness. Now it's interesting that consciousness is also called as a Kshetra Vikara. Now we know consciousness does not come from matter. Consciousness comes from soul. There's a whole book of Srila Prabhupada which is titled, which is conversation with primarily Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj and other disciples also, where, which is called Life Comes From Life, where the primary focus on establishing how the source of consciousness is not matter but spirit. Life comes from life, that's what the name suggests, you know, life does not come from matter. So that being the case, then why is this verse stating that Chetana, which means consciousness, is a Kshetra Vikar, is a transformation, is a change, a transformation of matter? Because this is not talking about consciousness per se, this is talking about consciousness projected within matter. It's talking about consciousness as it is experiencing the virtual reality or the movie reality. So going back to the earlier example, the person is watching in a movie theater. The person has, the spectators have their own consciousness. So they can look around, look left, look bottom. But right now they are looking straight at the movie theater. And as they are looking at the movie theater, what is happening? Their illusion, their whole attention is focused on the movie theater. And their consciousness is projected into that movie theater. And then whatever changes are happening, they actually have nothing to do with their original life, their real life. Real life in terms of the life which they have outside the movie theater. But that's what they are experiencing right now. So like that, we have a different life. We have a life at the spiritual level in relationship with Krishna. But unfortunately, we have forgotten that life. And right now, we are focusing on an alternative life. What is that alternative life? It's not just an alternative, it's an illusion actually. So, and it's a temporary illusion which we have, and that in this we are identifying with a particular body, a particular family, a particular nationality, and then we are experiencing a set of emotions. So the consciousness that we are experiencing right now is a Kshetra Vikar. It has got nothing to do with the original pure consciousness of the soul. So Sanghatas Chetana Dhriti. Dhriti refers to convictions. So we also have certain convictions. This is good, this is bad. You know, an Indian may think that Pakistanis are evil and Pakistanis may think Indians are evil. So we all have certain conceptions, certain convictions. So all these are produced by Kshetra Vikar. So Savikaram Udharatam. So in this way, Krishna is describing the Kshetra and the Kshetra. So this is a condensed description of Sankhya, which is given in the 13th chapter. So now, here, Prabhupada explains. Prabhupada says, one who desires to know the 24 elements in detail along with the interaction, study the philosophy in more detail. In Bhagavad Gita, a summary only is given. Sankhya is itself a whole complex and developed philosophy. And a theistic version of Sankhya is explained in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam and the teachings of Kapila. So this theistic Sankhya is the Sankhya wherein the idea of how ultimately the analysis of the 24 elements should lead us from matter to spirit, and from and within the arena of spirit it should lead us to the supreme spirit or the supreme personality of Godhead. That is the understanding of theistic Sankhya. So summary only is given, Prabhupada says. So Krishna's purpose here is not to exhaustively analyze Sankhya. He's basically, as we know in the Bhagavad Gita, there is a particular context. The context is for Arjuna to understand what is it that he should do on the battlefield. And it's not just fight or not fight. Yes, fight or not fight is the decision which he has to take, but on based on a certain understanding. So what is that understanding? That understanding is that he is a part of Krishna, and as a part of Krishna, it is best for him to act in harmony with Krishna. So how will he act in harmony with Krishna? by learning to love and serve Krishna. And that learning to love and serve Krishna will be based on understanding that Bhagavan is the highest sadhya and bhakti is the highest sadhana. So Krishna is analyzing Sankhya here so as to help Arjuna over a period of time understand that the ultimate reality is that there is bhakti. That even the analysis of Sankhya leads to Bhagavan as the highest reality and bhakti as the best sadhana. That's what will be talked about here. So now after describing this kshetra, Krishna in the next 5 verses will describe the 20 items of knowledge. So this is the longest set of verses that Srila Prabhupada puts together. In the 20 to 23 also are 5, 20, 21, 22, 23. There are 4 verses which Prabhupada has put together in the 6th chapter. But that is also actually 3.5 verses, because the 4th verse is half, which he takes as one verse, and then 24th verse he makes as having 6 lines. 6 lines in English or 3 lines in Sanskrit. So generally, 2 verses being put together happens quite several times. 3 verses being put together happens sometimes, but it's the only place in the whole Bhagavad Gita where Srila Prabhupada gives a combined purport for 5 verses. And the reason for that is, in one sense, logical and sound, because these 5 verses are talking about one theme. And what is the theme? That theme is about jnana. So, Arjuna has started with questions. Let's quickly go back a few steps to understand how this chapter is progressing. So, we see here that Arjuna had asked 6 questions about kshetra, kshetrajna, jnana, gheya and purusha and prakriti. So, kshetra and kshetrajna, he has answered the questions now. The kshetra is the body, and he's described in describes Sankhya's analysis of the kshetra, and then he's described kshetrajna, the 2 kshetrajnas, Atma and Paramatma. Now he is going to jnana. So then after that will be jnana. So let's look at jnana now. Amanitvam adambhitvam ahimsa shantir arjavam acharyopasanam shaucham. So we'll look at one by one the verses. It's significant that Krishna begins this description with amanitvam. Amanitvam means humility, and adambitvam is pridelessness. Now we wonder, what exactly is there a difference between amanitvam and adambitvam? Yes, there is a significant difference. Amanitvam refers to the not being proud when we have reason to be proud. And adambitvam means not being proud when we don't have reason to be proud. What do we mean by that? Sometimes some people put on a facade to look bigger than what they are. See, if a person is a billionaire and that person says, I am a billionaire. That is pride. But when a person is not a billionaire and the person claims, I am a billionaire, then that is dambha. That is hypocrisy in one sense. So Krishna says, that means we shouldn't brag about what we have, and not then to speak of bragging about what we don't have. So in general, people want to look big. They want to look big in the world's eyes. You know, I am so great, I am so this, I am so that. They want to look big. And in order to look big, they try to look big, they end up looking small. Because when people speak a lot about themselves, you know, I have done this, I have done that, I am like this, I am like that. And what happens by these thoughts? When people say, I am like this, I am like that, the end result of it is that those people end up becoming miserable. Why? Because they become so dependent, so terribly... they become afflicted by terrible senses of inadequacy and insecurity, because they are always dependent on others' praise, others' recognition, others' glorification, and without that they just have no shelter, no security. So therefore, those who aim to look big are small. They're small. They don't have any self-security, self-esteem, So that's why they are actually in a terrible predicament. So amanityam adambhityam. So first thing Krishna says is humility. Kena Upanishad also says, one who thinks he knows doesn't know, and one who knows he doesn't know, knows. So the idea is that a person doesn't claim that I know everything. So even when a devotee knows Krishna, a devotee understands that there is so much more to know about Krishna. So that's why a devotee never claims that I know Krishna entirely. In fact, when Arjuna says that Krishna, only you know. Svayamevatmana atmanam vittatvam purushottama bhutabhavana bhutesha devadeva jagatpate. So Krishna told Arjuna after the Chatushloki Bhagavad Gita, that after Krishna spoke Chatushloki Bhagavad Gita, then when Krishna, Arjuna was summarizing his understanding, he says, Krishna, only you know yourself. Svayam eva atmana atmanam, that you alone know yourself, nobody else knows you. Vitta tvam purushottama, vitta tvam purushottama, that you alone know yourself and nobody else knows you. So in this way, what Krishna is essentially telling Arjuna is that, what Arjuna is telling Krishna is that actually nobody knows me, nobody knows you. And even Krishna says that actually pradhanyatah kuru srishta. When I tell my vibhutis also, I tell principle. Because nantosti madivyana vibhutinam tapa. That actually my vibhutis are unlimited. So even for our spiritual knowledge, we should not be proud. What to speak of our material knowledge? Amanitvam adambhitvam. And then ahimsa shantirarjavam. Ahimsa shantirarjavam means, so ahimsa, as we know, is non-violence. Now actually, these attributes, these 20 elements of knowledge, we have discussed them once, because Srila Prabhupada talks about them in the Ishopanishad. When he is talking about the Vidya-Avidya section, verses 9 to 11. So at that time, the 10th verse, 10th mantra of the Ishopanishad, Anyadevahu vidyaya, anyadahura vidyaya, iti shushrumadhiranam, yenastadvichachakshire. So when Krishna is talking about that, he talks about two things over there. He talks about how there is one result which comes from vidya, another result which comes from avidya. So there he talks about those two results, and one of those results is that one gets the positive, that so there when he's talking about vidya, Prabhupada connects that vidya with the 20 items of knowledge. And he says that vidya essentially leads to development of all these virtues. So at the end of this set of verses, Krishna will say, etad jnanam iti progyam proktam ajnanam yatat anyatha, that all this constitutes knowledge and apart from that everything else is ignorance. So Krishna describes knowledge in terms of virtues, not in terms of items of information. Now, the technical knowledge is important, but the technical knowledge alone is not important. The technical knowledge alone is not important because the technical knowledge has got nothing to do with the character of a person. You know, a person may be a very good engineer in terms of making good houses or making good bridges or whatever, the person is a civil engineer, or good cars and planes if the person is a mechanical engineer or aeronautics engineer or whatever. But that has no reflection on the character of the person. Because when the person studies engineering, education doesn't contain anything about character development. So even within education, there is humanities and there is sciences. Those are two broad divisions. Of course, commerce is one more division, but humanities is a broad division. And humanities, there is literature, there is art, there is poetry, and all these things come up. So to some extent, humanities talks about the finer aspects of the human being, and sciences talk about the aspects of nature which we can control and which we can change, hopefully for our benefit. But either way, most of the knowledge that is there in today's educational scenario, that doesn't focus much on character development. It focuses primarily on earning. So The purpose of education is not just to earn a living. The purpose of education is to actually develop character. So, amanitvam, adambhitvam, ahimsa, shantir, arjavam. So, if we see all these that are talked about are qualities. Ahimsa is non-violence. So, let's look at what Srila Prabhupada says about each of these qualities. The first thing is that Srila Prabhupada says over here is that this process of knowledge is sometimes misunderstood by less intelligent people as being the interaction of the field of activity. That means some people think of this also as the kshetra vikar, which Krishna has talked about in the previous verse, 6th and 7th. But he says this is not kshetra vikar, this is the way, this is the path of kshetra vimukti. One has to get liberated from kshetra, for that this process is used. But actually this is the real process of knowledge. So this is, as Prabhupada further mentions, this is actually the means to get out of the entanglement of those elements. We are not studying the elements, we get out of these elements. So Prabhupada explains that all these elements are important. We'll come back to the upper part. Let's recite all the verses first. So indriyartheshu vairagyam anankarevacha janma mrityuchara vyadhi dukkha doshanu darshanam asaktiranabhishvangah putridarigrahadishu nityam cha samachittatvam ishtanishtopapattishu maichananya yogena bhaktiravibhicharini viviktadeshasevitvam aratirjana samsadi adhyatmajnanityatvam tattvajnanarthadarshanam etajjnanamiti proktam ajnanam yadato anyatha. So here Krishna is describing etas jnana miti proktam. All this is jnana. And apart from that, whatever is there is ajnana. Ajnana idato anyatha. So what all is he describing over here? As Prabhupada mentioned in the purport, that among all these, the most important element is maicha ananya yogena bhaktira vivicharini. Maicha ananya yogena. So, actually, the unalloyed devotional service to Krishna. So now this Krishna is talking about jnana over here. So within jnana, one element is described as bhakti. So actually this is just one element from the perspective of the jnanis. As we know, the jnanis also practice bhakti. We'll discuss about the yoga ladder in its technical details in a later class. But the important point right now is to understand that even the jnanis have to practice bhakti at some level. Only when they practice bhakti, by way that they get realizations. And then they get elevation, liberation also. Bhakti has to be there in all processes. So here Krishna is talking about jnana sadhana, and the jnanis have to develop certain qualities. And of course, these qualities can also be, they are also helpful on the path of devotion. And that's why Prabhupada explains to us in terms of how a devotee can understand and develop these qualities. So, generally speaking, when we get a disease, first of all, there is a visible symptom. Okay, I am feeling some pain in my stomach. And then, I feel pain in the stomach. That is just the visible, that is not just visible, I would say, perceivable symptom to us. That's what is tangible or perceivable to us. But then there are x-rays and there may be CT scans and there are other things. We say, okay, that pain in the stomach is because of, say, appendix problem. And then there is a treatment. So then there may be a set of complications. Okay, the appendix has grown too big, or it has been moved, its position has become this, or it's become infected or whatever. So now these are not some things which can be perceived immediately. They are something which we need a jnana chakshu to perceive. The jnana chakshu here refers to not philosophical jnana chakshu, but the medical jnana chakshu. The doctor has to use the technical instruments as well as the technical knowledge to understand that. And then after that, there is a progression, there is a solution. What is the solution? Maybe you have to do a surgery and cut the appendix. So that means there is first, just like there is an iceberg. When there is a huge iceberg that is floating. So often this one small part of the iceberg is above the ground. above the water. And below the water, there might be a giant iceberg. That's what happened when the Titanic collided. So what happened was the guard was not alert, and they saw this. When they saw this iceberg, it was too late. The ship was moving too fast, and they just couldn't veer off. And it was so big that they just couldn't turn off. So then, the iceberg, a small part of it is above, but below that is the giant body of snow. It's almost like a moving island or a moving mountain of snow. Boom! And the ship collides with it. Tack! The ship just rattles and cracks, and then crumbles and drowns. So like that, what essentially happens over here is that when I have a disease, then there is one tangible symptom which I see. For example, I may find that I have some difficulty in swallowing, and then I have some vomiting or some jaw pains or whatever, and then I find that actually I've got leukemia, I've got blood cancer. So there is one perceivable symptom, but below that there is much more serious problems which are there. And then there may be a solution. I may try chemotherapy, I may try radiotherapy, I may try some form of extreme natural therapy, whatever. So there can be different things which I may try. So those are used for treatment. And then after that, there is the cure. So like that, when there is the glacier, first I see the top part, then I see there's such a giant. Even if I don't see with my knowledge, I understand there must be a giant glacier below. And then after that, tuck, I will turn it around so that I can get out of the way, somehow or the other, whichever way is possible. So in the same way, what is required over here is to understand that there is a visible symptom. What is the visible symptom of our problems will be described over here, Janma Mrityu Jara Vyadhi Dukkha Doshanu Darshanam. So this is a symptom. There is old age, there is disease, there is death. These are all so tragic, so painful. So these are, now birth, we have discussed earlier how birth, many people may not think it to be painful, but it is painful. Because the conscious being is trapped in the mother's womb. So birth, old age, disease and death, these are the miseries of material existence. So once one pursues this, why are these miseries there? Then, that's, so perceiving these miseries is like perceiving the tip of the visible part of the iceberg. Below that, what we understand is the misdirection of our consciousness. The deeper problem is, our consciousness, instead of being attracted to spirit, is attracted to matter. And that misdirection of consciousness from matter to from spirit to matter causes a variety of bad qualities. And the redirection of matter to spirit will bring about the development of those virtuous qualities. So there is a visible problem, there is a surface problem, there is a deeper problem, and then there is a solution. The surface problem is there is Janma Mrityu Jara Vyadhi. The deeper problem is that there is no Amanatvam, there is no Adambetvam, there is no Ahimsa, there is no this, all these qualities are not there. And what is the solution? So now for example, if I go to a doctor and I say I am feeling very weak. The doctor says you have got anemia, your blood pressure is, your RBCs are very low, you know, and then your blood pressure is not proper. And then your pulse is irregular. And this. The doctor gives me a series of technical parameters of all that is wrong. I say, okay, that's okay. But please tell me, what is the treatment? What should I do? You know, I can't do much just by knowing that my cholesterol is too high or my blood pressure is too low or my RBC count is too less. What should I do practically? But practically, the doctor says, okay, take this medicines. So knowing that there is no Amanitvam, there is no Adambitvam, there is no Ahimsa, all these are like knowing the deficiencies and knowing that this is what we have to work on. But in the bhakti path, Maichananya Yogena Bhakti Ravvibhacharini, that to the extent we start practicing bhakti, to the extent that we start cultivating, embracing the path of devotion, to that extent we will start making spiritual advancement. And to that extent we will be able to rapidly advance and go back to Godhead. So, and then we'll go beyond Janma Mrityu Jara Vyadhi also. Just as a person who takes the proper treatment becomes free from the deeper problem as well as from the substance surface problem. So that's why Prabhupada also quotes Yasyasti Bhaktir Bhagavatya Kinchana, that a devotee is free from, a devotee has all the good qualities of devatas. We discussed this verse earlier. So I will not go into that right now. And then Prabhupada explained that Acharyopasanam, the word accepting a spiritual master and worshipping a spiritual master, that is the most important among these, because that is the basis for which other things progress. So now, Prabhupada's explanation of these are quite classic. Prabhupada says, humility means that one should not be anxious to have the satisfaction of being honored by others. To not have the satisfaction of being honored by others. It's a classic definition. That means, not that a devotee should not be honored by others. You know what happens when you practice devotional services? That we do get honor. Isn't it? How do we get honor? We get honor by the fact that we are honored, in the sense that people may even come and offer obeisances to us. Now, where do we see that in worldly life? So a devotee accepts respect, but a devotee does not expect respect. What is the difference between accept and expect? Accept means we understand it's a part of Vaishnava etiquette. It's a way of reciprocating affection and proper conduct among devotees. So, you know, it's not that we tell others don't offer obeisances. Yeah, we accept respect, but we don't expect respect. Expect respect means that we don't demand respect from others. So that's how it is. So a devotee is not anxious. Is a devotee concerned that wherever I go, am I properly respected or not? No, a devotee is not concerned about that. A devotee is concerned, how best can I serve Krishna? Whatever be the situation, how can I best serve Krishna? And that's what the devotee primarily focuses on. How can I best serve Krishna? And then based on that, the devotee serves Krishna in different ways. So, and then Prabhupada says that as for actual advancement in spiritual science, one should have a test to see how far he is progressing. He can judge by these items. Like Prabhupada is saying that, so Prabhupada is giving us a very balanced perspective. One side he said that if we practice bhakti, then we will develop these good qualities. But then he also makes the point that if we are practicing bhakti, then we should be having these qualities. That means, what is he saying? That the test of spiritual advancement is the development of these qualities. So, in one sense, we don't have to do anything extra to develop these qualities. We have to just practice devotional service, these qualities will come. But while practicing devotional service, we should also try to do this. We should also make sure that these qualities are coming. Just like if a patient is taking the medicines, then at that time, the proper medicines will lead to the, say, if the RBC count is low, the patient has got anemia. Then if the patient is taking say proper iron or whatever is required, then the RBC count will rise. So one doesn't have to do something extra for that, apart from whatever the prescription that is given. But then while the prescription is being given and the prescription is being taken, one also has to observe, okay, is the prescription leading to the improvement in the expected parameters? If that is not happening, then maybe there are some other factors, maybe some other complication. Maybe a person may have some other disease or some other problem because of which that medicine is not having the desired effect. So like that, we might be committing offenses because of the pursuit of devotional service is not leading to the desired result. So we have to observe both ways. So Prabhupada gives a very elevated explanation of non-violence over here. Prabhupada says that actually one should try to his best to distribute real knowledge to the people so that they can become enlightenment and leave this material entanglement. That is non-violence. So, Prabhupada is saying that non-violence doesn't mean not attacking others. Actually, the soul is evolving through various species, and now the soul has come to human form. And for the human form, the soul can become liberated. So, when the soul soul has the opportunity to become liberated, to not let the soul take that opportunity, that is violence. It is like a patient is in a hospital where the patient can be cured, and the patient is cured, the patient can get discharged. So if the doctor does not give the proper medicine, then the doctor is not necessarily doing anything wrong. The doctor is not giving stealing some organ. But just negligence is also are culpable from a doctor's part.
When a doctor knows that this is the medicine which should be given and the doctor doesn't give that medicine, that is also a crime in one sense. So that is, as Prabhupada says, similarly, when we know that people can be benefited by spiritual knowledge and still we don't share spiritual knowledge, then that is violence. And we are obstructing, or we are not facilitating the people's spiritual recovery. So real non-violence means to not interfere with people's spiritual recovery. And then Prabhupada explains about tolerance also. Ahimsa shantir arjavam. So we discussed about tolerance earlier. Tolerance is not importance. Tolerance is persistence. It's not that we just accept everything that is inflicted upon us, but tolerance means that we don't let the small things in life distract us from the big things. And we keep our... So somebody might insult me, something might go wrong in my life, in the daily day routines, but I don't let that distract me from my ultimate spiritual purpose. And Prabhupada explains that Ahimsa Shantir Arjavam is simplicity or truthfulness. So a devotee is not unnecessarily diplomatic, is not unnecessarily political. Now Prabhupada explains something very significant over here. Because a bona fide spiritual master is a representative of Krishna, if he bestows any blessings upon his disciple, that will make the disciple immediately advanced without the disciples following the regulatory principles. Or the regulatory principles will be easier for one who has served a spiritual master without reservation. It's interesting. So Prabhupada is acknowledging the possibility here that somebody can become spiritually advanced even without following the regulative principles. So, you know, the regulative principles are important, but they're not all important. Ultimately, it is one's attraction to Krishna, and bhakti sanjayate bhakti. Actually, it's one's attraction to Krishna that is developed by one's connection with the devotees. One associates with those who have bhakti, then by their association we also get bhakti, and by that we make spiritual advancement. So, bhakti sanjayate bhakti. So the regulative principles will be easier to follow for one who has served a spiritual master without reservation. So there are two ways. One will automatically become spiritually advanced by getting the mercy of the spiritual master, even without following the regulative principles. And conversely, that one will get strength to follow the regulative principles by practicing devotion, by serving the spiritual master. So either way, the important point is that one should be strongly connected with devotees, and that attraction to devotees is the propellant on the spiritual path. It is not just the following of the regulative principles. And Prabhupada explains the standard, what is cleanliness, so we are not going to all of that. He discussed about Vachyove, of Jivbhavegam also. So Prabhupada explains the same point over here. So now here, Prabhupada talks about the suffering of the unborn. These are the miseries, janma mrityu chara vyadhi dukkha doshana darshanam. So unless we have a pessimistic view of this material life, considering the distresses of birth, death, old age and disease, there is no impetus for our making advancement in spiritual life. Now, our devotee is pessimistic. This pessimism is more of realism. You know, if somebody gives a glass of water and if you say that this glass is half empty, then you say, no, see positively, see that the glass is half full. So seeing the caller saying the glass is half empty, that is, we could say, pessimism. And seeing that the glass is half full, that is optimism. But if the glass is fully empty and somebody says, why are you giving me an empty glass? Says, now why are you so pessimistic? Actually, don't think negatively, you know. This is not thinking negatively, this is just objective negative. Somebody is thirsty, and can you please give me some water? Yes. And the person just gives an empty glass. This glass is empty. Oh, why are you such a negative thinker? Why are you so pessimistic? No, actually, it's not a matter of pessimism. It's reality. So, actually, denying reality is not optimism. It is stupidism. It is what? Stupidism. Actually, it's not that, see, when it would be pessimism is, if there were no solution. If a patient is terribly sick, and the patient doesn't know any treatment, then maybe you could say that not telling the patient about the sickness, there's no treatment known for that particular sickness, then we might say that, okay, this is just a disaster, why talk about it? Let the patient live peacefully as long as the patient is going to live. Of course, that's not a sound strategy. The patient also has to prepare for death, the psychological closure that is required with relatives and other emotional issues with different people. So it's best that the patient be told and prepared to face the final moments of death. But the important point is that to recognize overall the importance of of realism. So we have to recognize that we are that there are certain things which are negative in real life. So if I have a disease, I have a disease. Accepting that is what enables us to move forward in life. I accept that I have this disease, then let me see what is the next thing I can do. The next thing that I can do is start practicing spiritual life and start taking a medicine and try to see how much I can be cured. Or if I can't be cured, then accept that and make do with life with however it is. So either way, the important point again and again to recognize is that we have to stay on and on. We can't just deny the reality. We accept the reality that there is a suffering, and then we work to find out a cure for the suffering. By denying this reality of the suffering, we don't make the suffering go away. In fact, we make it worse. If I have a disease and I deny that I have the disease, in turn the disease is going to make things worse for me. So like that, old age, disease and death are inevitable. But they are inevitable only at the material level of reality. Beyond the material level, there is the spiritual level of reality. And at the spiritual level of reality, they are not inevitable. They are entirely avoidable. And when we recognize this and we avoid these, then we make steady spiritual advancement by that. We get impetus to make spiritual advancement. So if at all there is any pessimism in Vedic philosophy, it is only initial. It is not final. Initial means, yes, there is a serious disease. This disease is serious. It needs to be unsentimentally, rigorously treated. So that initial seriousness on the part of the doctor is important so that the patient knows what all is to be done to take the treatment. How important and how unavoidable the treatment is. But after that, if the treatment is going to cure, then that's optimism. So this is accepting the mystery of birth, old age, disease and death is not pessimism, it is realism. And Prabhupada talks about this as the universal evils. Now Prabhupada translates this as, let us see. The perception of the evil of birth, old age, disease and death. Birth, death, old age and disease, the evil. Now normally the problem of evil is considered to be a major problem in Western philosophy. And what is the problem of evil? That if God is good, then why do bad things happen in this world? Why do some small babies get some terrible diseases and die? Why do innocent people die in earthquakes and tsunamis? So that idea is this is a problem of evil. But the Vedic philosophy expands the problem of evil to a much broader scope. It doesn't say that, okay, why do small children die? Why do innocent people die in terrorist attacks or tsunamis or whatever? The problem is, why does anybody die? Why does anybody die at all? We may say that untimely death is bad, but ultimately actually all death is bad, isn't it? Nobody wants to die. And all death is suffering. So rather, certainly, these are, we may say that there's a particular order in nature. And, you know, when people grow old and die, that is natural. And if some small children die or young people die, that is unnatural. That jolts us. That is true. But rather than questioning the specific problems within the natural system, why not go deeper and question the natural system itself? Why is there death at all? And that is a fundamental question. In Vedanta, this is one of the most fundamental issues. You know, if Brahma is eternal, then how can, if this world is temporary, then how will the temporary come from the eternal? How can something which is asat achit nirananda come from that which is sat chit ananda? And that, of course, the Veda explains by the transformation of the energies, as is talked about here, Kshetra Vikar. So that is the energy of this absolute truth. But the point here is that when a devotee gets this broader vision, Jnana Chakshu, and understand that not the specific, the generic, material existence itself is a misery. And within that, when we have lesser or greater miseries, but instead of getting carried away by those, focus on the fundamental misery itself. That is the evil. Then Srila Prabhupada further explains that the Prabhupada makes an important point over here. As for attachment from children, wife and home, it is not meant that one should have no feeling for these. They are natural objects of affection. Natural objects of affection means that one should, it's natural that we will have some attraction for them. So we can't be expected to be heartless in the name of, especially if somebody is in grihastha life, then one has to have a proper relationship with one's family members, and one has to take care of the family members. And taking care doesn't mean just arranging for the financial needs and the physical needs. That is, of course, financial needs are important, financially is important, but along with that, one has to take care emotionally also. You know, we see that when the Pandavas were in the forest, at that time they were near Badrikashram. So then in the river, Draupadi saw a 1,000-petal lotus flower just flowing through the river. And then when she saw it, she was attracted. Bhima was around there only. So Bhima saw it, and Bhima went and got that flower for her. And she was very happy, and she thought that, now this flower is so beautiful. She asked Bhima, can you get some more flowers for me? And actually Bhima immediately went, and he went up to the Himalaya, climbing up the Himalayas, and then he had a big fight with the Yakshas over there. In there, from their garden, that flower had come. Now we may say, isn't this just a hand-pecked husband? And the wife is asking for a flower, and the husband is just running and having a fight with somebody else to get a flower. No, Bhima understood that Draupadi was in a state of great misery at that time. First of all, she had been dishonored in the Kuru assembly, and after that they were living in exile. And on top of that, Arjuna, who was the person who had won Draupadi in the Swayamvar. So although Draupadi loved all the queen, all her husbands, but still Arjuna had a special place in her heart, and Arjuna had gone to the heavens. So she was not there, Arjuna was not there for her. So naturally she was feeling a little, she was feeling bad, and Bhima wanted to please her. So Bhima went up and got that flower for her. So actually taking care also means taking care emotionally. So there is one has to be affectionate towards one's loved ones. So affectionate means it's not in the name of being detached, one has to be heartless. So there is our vertical relationship with Krishna, and there is our horizontal relationship with our loved ones. So the ideal situation is that the horizontal and the vertical both work together. So our horizontal relationship strengthens our vertical relationship, and our vertical relationship strengthens our horizontal relationship. You know, we love our family members, and our family member, that love for our family members, if they are devotees, helps us to increase our love for Krishna also, because together we do devotional activities. And our love for Krishna helps us to develop greater self-mastery, greater sensitivity, greater maturity, and that helps us to become better family members also. So this works, should work both ways. So now, what if our family members are not devotees? At that time also, we should see this as an opportunity for us to internalize the devotional principles of humility, tolerance, sensitivity, and thereby inspire them to practice devotional service more and more. Not by necessarily by being preachy or bossy, but by being sensitive and kind. And then only when there is when the atmosphere is entirely pratikul, at that time one may have to do something extreme. So it's like Prahlad, you know, he couldn't say Matra Deva Bhava Pitra Deva Bhava to Hiranyakashipu. You know, he respected Hiranyakashipu, but still he said, no, I'll continue my devotion to you. Those are extreme situations. So normally a devotee should be affectionate but not attached. So we will discuss about this conception of difference between affection and attachment more in our next class. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.